number four?
Yes.
Did you go to public comment?
Yes.
Okay. Do we have any speaker cards?
Not I. Got cards, but I don't know if anybody filled them out.
I have a question, though.
Sure. Why don't you want to stand up, and then you can project, and go ahead.
Short question.
Sure.
For Michael, and maybe it'll engage a little bit more discussion, but how do you envision, when you say irrigated agriculture discharges to groundwater, discharges nitrates to groundwater, how do you envision that happening? Because what we've learned, at least in Monterey County, about our hydrologic zones is that it can take up to 50 years from the time the fertilizer is applied on ground, if it is indeed fertilizer, to the time it actually reaches the aquifer. So it feels like current irrigated ag is being a little bit demonized and focused on, when Dominic's talk really was much broader and looking at the broader watershed. And I'm listening to you, and it sounds very, very point source oriented. So I'm just curious a little bit more about how you envision that connection, so we can understand it, because we'll hear a lot about it tomorrow.
The way I'm talking about it is that when we look at the total tonnage of fertilizer that's applied to various crops, and that total tonnage results in a certain percentage percolating downward to groundwater. It goes past the root zone, through the vadose zone, and down. And yes, it depends on where you are as far as how much time it takes and the underlying geological conditions. In some areas it can take 50 years, in some areas it can take more. In other areas it takes just a few years. It depends on the geological formations that exist in the area that you're talking about. So you could say 50 years in some areas, it's true. You could say 100 years in other areas, and that would be true. What we're seeing is very large amounts of fertilizer being applied. A certain percentage of that percolates downward overall into groundwater. And the massive amount of the tonnage of it is overwhelming. Like I said, 90 million pounds per year. And we see the results over time in groundwater, the concentrations in groundwater increasing. And we see wells where wells that are affected that are 10 times the drinking water standard. So we have to address that issue. The reports that we referenced in our documents overwhelmingly state that the source of nitrate in groundwater through areas that are dominated by irrigated agriculture, the source of nitrates are irrigated agriculture. I'm not saying that it's just something that started last year or 2 years ago or 5 years ago. It is a decades-old problem. But it is not just a decades-old problem. It is not a legacy problem. It is an ongoing problem. It is being applied. That massive amount of fertilizer is being applied today.
Michael, is the 90 million pounds the amount applied
no,
the surface,
it's
or is it
the
proportion 10% that's getting down?
30 plus percent that is percolating downward, according to this report that we referenced.
Okay. Does anyone else wish to go ahead, sir?
On that score, how does the present amount of...
Could you state your name, please?
Eddie Ashjerry. How does that amount of groundwater, the level of nitrate in groundwater, how does that compare to what's being applied? So if there's 90,000 pounds,
90 million pounds,
what is the amount that's being applied to on those soils?
There's a conversion factor. It's in our report. I don't know off the top of my head, but there's an absolute amount that's being applied, and then we take a proportion of that percolates downward, roughly 30 something percent. Do a molecular weight conversion, and you get 90 million pounds.
I think it's over 200 million pounds of nitrogen applied in Salinas Valley.
Does anyone else wish to address the board on either this topic, number four, or any other item not on the agenda.
Thank you, Chairman. I was going to. Darlene Dinn. Mine is more on, because we're looking at performance measures, kind of that's the...
And just
in looking at it, when you look at sources, you know, whether it's wastewater treatment, it's kind of an easy point source, or a landfill, and even our timber industry is kind of isolated. I just would ask, as you look at the basin management plan and as you look at how you're going to implement, there's multiple soil types, size of farms, commodities, changing, and while you look at them in their total as a large source of problem, they're individual operations. And I don't know if you've ever looked at the comparison of land mass, you know, on how taking the region on land mass and then what those sources are. I guess, from a sheer gut check, it would appear that the major land use would probably have the major inputs. I mean, that, and, you know, how do you measure that and deal with it? And in the areas that are heavily rural residential, that maybe have, you know, different types of agriculture use, you know, and then as we look at, you know, methodology and how we improve, I guess I look at performance and measures as how you do the standards and how agricultural functions. There, if you don't intersect at those, I think that's why, from an agriculturalist, on a regulatory basis, depending on their operation, when they went from a limited regulatory to a very large, if they can't, for instance, leach and they have high salt content at the root zone, they went from having a crop to not having a crop. To them, that's an intensive regulatory burden to go from a harvesting of a crop to not being able to have a crop. So I would just really ask you to take a step back, and I understand your regulatory response. And as you look at these performance measures and you look at your basic management plan, it isn't just on maybe how you calculate your poundage. I think it's kind of like how the state board looks at you as how many permits. What really struck me interesting, Mr. Thomas, is I looked at you and listened to you real carefully and thought that's interesting because you're looking at a measure that they're saying how many permits did you do and that doesn't actually fix anything. And I'm kind of looking at it, okay, now how do I go back to the farming community and say this is a poundage issue and that's how you fix it, but you even see how hard that is to actually improve water quality. So that would just be, you know, I would just really ask you, and I don't have a solution, I'm not the technical expert, I just like to listen to your meetings and write a lot of notes, but I would just ask you to take a step back, and you're having a hard time measuring for you. So think of how much more yielding it is for multiple property owners, commodities, bases, soil type, water, base water, you know, delivered water, not delivered, surface, ground. I mean, it's a huge issue. So thank you. That was more my thing. I don't know if I got thrown off, but thank you.
Thank you. Does anyone else wish to address the board on what we've been talking about, or any
over there?
Right here.
There you are. Okay.
I have a couple of questions. I'm Bridget Hoover with the Sanctuary.
Okay.
Michael, so kind of getting back to the arrows diagram, with the degree of regulation, I guess I was a little bit surprised to see irrigated ag kind of so low on that line compared to the stormwater permitting. And how is it just kind of relative, or is it based on number of staff addressing that issue, or is it because you're just kind of getting going with irrigated ag versus you've been working with the local jurisdictions a little bit longer, or how exactly is that?
What I'm comparing there are the comprehensiveness of the regulations in our orders. So we have regulatory language and requirements in the orders that we issue to municipalities for them to deal with their stormwater. So I'm comparing the comprehensiveness of those requirements, what they have to do, the best management practices that they have to implement, and the reporting that they have to do on those to show us that they are effective. Very strict requirements.
And so do you kind of see that happening in the future with irrigated ag? I know you said that it wasn't going to get to that point that stormwater is at now, but...
I'm not saying it won't get to that point. I'm saying that with the draft order that we published back in February.
February 1st.
That we're trying to move irrigated ag further down that line, but not what we proposed is not as comprehensive as what we're doing with stormwater, for example, or many of our other activities.
And my other question, I guess, or maybe just comment, it seems like when you started out talking about your performance measures, you were kind of focused on staff and how you evaluate, you know, your in-house performance measures, and kind of towards the end of the presentation, you were more focused on environmental effects and impacts and evaluating improvements to water quality or the environment and using those more for developing the matrices for those types of performance measures. So are you trying to do both, or are you...
We have to do both.
Integrating...
Yeah, the state board actually started with four different tiers. And the basic tier is things like, do you have a place for staff to work? Are they trained? You know, do you have pencils? Do you have computers? Just the sort of basic infrastructure. And then it works its way up, but the final frontier of tiers is environmental outcomes. And that's, I mean, you can have a great running office and well-trained staff, but it's pointless if you're not getting to the environmental outcomes.
I just want to add, though, it's more than just both, because both, the answer to both is our program and staff effort, performance, and water quality. There's also performance progress by all the parties, dischargers, others that we work with, influence, regulate, et cetera, that does tell us something about if we're moving forward and making progress and getting closer to water quality. So it's all that, too.
Yeah, would you call those programmatic?
Hmm. I'm going to get into lingo. I call them all operational measures. There's operational measures and there's outcome measures. And the operational measures are our operational measures and anyone else's operational measures in response to whatever. Grant funds that we give them, permits that we write, inspections that we do. You know, so you can call them program performance measures if you want to.
Okay. Does anyone else wish to address the board? Sure.
That's good.
Hi, my name is Maria Oshadach, and I'm a graduate student with the Coastal and Watershed Science and Policy Program at CSMB. And I have a question probably for you, Michael. I'm just after reading, and I'm really new at all this, but after reading, you know, the history and development of water regulation, and it's my understanding that irrigated ag has been treated as a non-point source. And I'm wondering, is any part of that process going to be looked at point source pollution, you know, in order to actually be a process to apply to?
Yes. We, Lisa, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, if I can get through this. One of the things we're considering is our individual waste discharge requirements for the more high-risk operations. So if we have large, high-risk operations that are discharging large quantity of pollutants, large volume of pollutants, or large mass of pollutants, we are considering waste discharge requirements for those entities, which is more of a point source approach. Does that answer your question?
But I was wondering, you know, specifically, like for example, treating certain agricultural processes as point source, like a tile drainage system.
Michael, maybe I can answer that.
The
difference between point source and non-point source is really a legal issue that the Clean Water Act requires sets forth standards for point sources, and they define that term in the law, and it's defined to be pipes and canals and ponds and anything that they define that as a point source. But the law, this Clean Water Act, the Federal Clean Water Act, exempted irrigated agriculture from the definition of point source. So they may have pipes that you would think are point sources, but they're just defined by law as not being point sources. And non-point source is generally the things that kind of run across land and end out in creeks but don't go through a pipe. But the legal definition is pretty pretty much mixes up things that you would think are point sources aren't, and things that you might think are non-point sources are actually point sources. So it's really a legal issue, and how we regulate it can be affected by the legal definition of a point source. So irrigated agriculture is not regulated under the Federal Clean Water Act under the NPDES permit program. It can be regulated under by the basin planning, I mean the TMDL's total maximum daily load, which is a Clean Water Act issue, but not under NPDES permits. So.
Now, Francis can correct me if I'm wrong, but I just want to also add that the state non-point source policy essentially says use the same authorities under Porter Cologne and state law as appropriate to address discharges from non-point sources.
As you would for
points. As you would for points, as we did for points.
Yes,
so,
and that's
so
correct.
The authority to write waste discharge requirements under certain circumstances for any non-point source discharges, whether or not they are more physically like a point source or not, we have it, and we have done it, and that's exactly what
And the other way to say that is under the state law, the Porter Cologne Water Quality Control Act, the board can regulate any discharges of waste to waters of the state, regardless of their way of getting to the water.
Okay.
And so that's what Michael was talking about, was regulating agriculture could be regulated under formal waste discharge requirements, which is a type of permit, or the current way, which is through a waiver of waste discharge requirements, which is just simply means that each individual person doesn't actually apply for a permit. They're regulated in a more general way.
Mm-hmm.
So
okay.
That's the distinction.
Okay.
Okay, if that's our last speaker, then we will conclude our meeting today, and it's almost 4:25, and we will resume tomorrow morning.
8:30.
At 8:30.